Guys, I went to a swim meet yesterday and I got a rude awakening. Hello and welcome to the Swim Brief. I'm Chris DeSantis. On this podcast, I go deep on things that come up in my coaching. I'm an expert in positive psychology, a former and recovering swim coach, and somebody that spends too much time thinking about all this stuff. Today, I'm going to talk about another swim meet that I swam in. And one unflattering result in particular. And no, just spoiler alert, it's not that Kyle Stockwell swam a 50 fly faster than me wearing jeans. No, I put myself in a 200 free. And as I said in the opening, it was a rude awakening. Before you press skip on this one, because you think, why would I want to listen to stuff about some random Masters meet? Chris, you're 40 years old. Listening to you swim in meets. Let me say this. I don't share my good to middling master's results just for fun. I actually always use them to reflect on my own coaching, the stuff that I do. And if you're a coach or a parent, which is 99% of my audience, from what I can gather, this podcast is going to be useful to you because some of the ways that I even think about my own swimming. Right? Those are applicable whether you're a coach or a parent watching somebody go to a swim meet. I don't think I get many athletes listening to this, but for you, it'd be good for you too. In this particular meet, I stepped out of my comfort zone and decided to race some other stuff. I want to talk about that a minute because one of the things I fundamentally believe is important for swimming athletes is to swim a diversity of events. And I hadn't been doing this myself. There were, I guess, some decent reasons for that. So I'll get into how I decided to swim, what I swam, what I ran into in the lead up of the meet, and then where everything came to a head when I faced that hard reality check in the form of a 200 free. The 200 free, man, it is an event that will really lay your soul bare, in terms of what you're doing. So first, let's talk about the implications behind mixing up what you're doing racing-wise. I never like to frame things in terms of problems. If you've been listening for a long time, you know, positive psychology, it's not a problem-based psychology. But I do see some serious inefficiencies that any swimmer will come up against when they swim the same events over and over again. And I think, you know, this is probably particularly an issue for, like, let's say you're on a high school team or you're a college athlete, you know, and you have your best set of events and you're swimming a bunch of competitive meets, you may be racing the same thing over and over and over again in quick succession, right? And that's far from ideal in terms of a developmental perspective. And I think it speaks to when I broaden it out, you know, something about specialization, right? In any situation, specialization is often the shortest route to improvement in the short term. So, you know, if you're somebody who's been real generalized, doing lots of different things, in the near term, specializing will help you make a lot of progress in whatever you've specialized in. But it also makes you quite fragile. And makes you fragile because you become very, very one-dimensional, right? And you get a lot of ego invested in something that quite naturally, you know, like that early boost you got from specialization, quite naturally, you face a point of diminishing returns. And then all of a sudden, you have your ego invested in those returns coming in. So it can be really dangerous psychologically, repeating the same events over and over again, focusing all your training around a limited set of events, likewise, or even just solely focusing on one type of swim training, more on that later. You may see a lot of improvement in the very short term, but you know, mixing it up, swimming different things, doing exercise that's not swimming, right? I think all that stuff makes you broadly better and quite a bit less fragile. Okay, quite a bit more anti-fragile, which is what I think people should be aiming for in a sporting context. And again, anti-fragile, what I mean by that is you are somebody who benefits from the sort of unpredictable ups and downs of life, right? So if you don't have all your stuff invested in one race and you have a really bad day, like for me doing breaststroke that day, you know, you have a diverse investment. You have investments in other events, right? So you have other opportunities to have a good day. Because chances are how one stroke goes is not necessarily tied to some of the other ones you have. Or if you have something going on, right, that's not swimming, that's good too. There is always a limit to how much you can squeeze out of narrow focus, okay? And many novice swimmers, by the way, let me just recognize, many novice swimmers come up in a very generalized environment, at least swimming-wise. They're probably swimming too much and not doing other things with their body enough, but they regardless get a quite an intoxicating hit of improvement when they specialize a bit. But you can never quite match that high from that point forward. So I think if you plan on competing for a long time, which I do, I would like to compete for as long as I possibly can at this point. That's my plan. Then you're almost always better off changing up what you swim and or going beyond that and training and competing in things that are not swimming, right? I'm even contemplating running again. I never thought I would say that, but for obvious reasons that will be obvious by the end of you listening to this podcast, I'm looking to change a few things up because you will make more efficient progress when you broaden that focus out, because even things that you think of as unrelated, they're not completely unrelated. So if you step into an area where you're very underdeveloped, like you can improve really quickly, and that improvement will cross over into some other things that you do. Okay, that's just fundamentally a philosophy that I believe. One of the best things that ever happened to me, for instance, as a young athlete, was, for reasons I probably explained in a different podcast, I had to join the cross country team in my senior year of high school when I was all in on the sport of swimming. And it was very humbling for me, right? I was the best guy on my high school swim team, or one of the best guys. And I had to work the entire season just to scratch, you know, my way into the lineup, right, of the cross country team. There weren't that many guys on the cross country team, but it was really, really good for me. I had a great swim season afterwards. I had not had that much diversity, if we bring this back to swimming and what I was swimming, primarily because I competed so little. And by little, I mean, again, in the context of people that I've coached, which are mainly school-age kids, right? I only did 3 meets in 2023. Most kids are doing a lot more meets than that. And this is my second, this meet, that was in 2023. This is in 2024, my second meet. I'll do a third meet, and that'll probably be it for 2024, right? I'll do Masters Nationals next month. So it's not as if I'm competing too much in the events. If I do them at all 3 meets, if I just decide to swim breaststroke and 50 free, you know, right, firmly, basically, which is my comfort zone right now, it's not that I'm racing those things too much. 3 times a year is not too much, in my opinion, to race an event. It's that I'm lacking that diversity overall. A swimmer that competed once every 4 to 6 weeks, which I kind of see as the sweet spot. And again, right, if you're a high school athlete on a high school team or you're on a college team, good luck following that ideal pattern of every 4 to 6 weeks. But I think 4 to 6 weeks, probably 6 weeks more than 4, is kind of, if I were to just plan up an ideal competition schedule, I would compete every 6 weeks, and I would have people that I coach compete every 6 weeks, because I basically would do a 4 to 5 week training block, a week of deloading, compete, right? That's something that I got into while I was working with Jersey Wahoos, and it works spectacularly, in my opinion. It matches that sort of keeping you focused and in the moment of what you're doing at any given moment, but you also want some time between competitions to do some training. Now, in the week prior to the meet, I went on vacation, which you know if you've been listening to this podcast. And what a wonderful vacation it was. Was it probably ideal for my swim meet? No. But I got away and I spent 3 blissful days with my wife, Kate. You've heard her on this podcast, and only with Kate. And that's something I only get to do about once a year. So I guess I bring that up to say often you're going to have conflicting priorities, but this one was pretty easy for me. And I would say, you know, one of the things that I've learned to do, it's taken me a long time to do this, but I'm doing a better job once I make decisions of sort of backing myself up to be like, you made the right decision, and not getting that sort of decision paralysis, you know, where even after you make a decision, you sort of second guess yourself a lot. So I decided, you know, this is the best thing overall. Maybe it's not the best thing for the swim meet, but who cares, right? That's not my priority. My priorities, I've got a lot of things in line before my own swimming in the priority line, right? Unfortunately, when I got home, I got a little stomach bug. And as of even the morning of the meet, I was contemplating not going. But I decided to go. And I think this is useful, I mean, for anybody, you know, especially as you get older. You know, I'm realizing you're not going to go to a lot of meets where you feel 100%. I mean, I don't feel 100% like pretty much any day anymore. Can't remember the last time I felt 100%. But yet I was also healthy enough to compete, right? It wasn't like I was like, you know, bedridden and couldn't be there. Well, didn't think I was at a risk for getting anybody else sick. You know, probably something that I ate. And I decided to compete and see what happened. I took it one event at a time. And rather than making excuses for myself ahead of time, I think this is like kind of a quandary that people run into, right? You come into the meet, you know you're not 100%. And quite naturally, I think as coaches often, we go like, we don't want to focus on not being 100% into the meet because we want to become a self-fulfilling, self sort of limiting prophecy. Well, I knew I wasn't 100% coming into the meet, and then therefore I backed away from being my best or whatever my best was on that given day. The way that I look at it is, and I do this in my coaching with athletes, right? I made a plan for when I got to the day, what could I do to give myself the best chance that day? How was I going to warm up? How was I going to, you know, what was I going to eat for breakfast? How was I going to swim down? How was I going to be at the beat? And afterwards, when evaluating my results, I did take into account, hey, you weren't feeling like, you weren't keeping a lot of food down in the 2 days leading into this, right? And that will affect you. I swam a 50 fly, 27:30. That was my first race. It's my first 50 fly since 2009, which sounds ridiculous when I say it out loud. But, you know, hey, maybe many of you listening to this haven't swam a 50 fly in longer than that, right? Just for comparison's sake, last time I raced 50 fly, I was in a blue 70 bodysuit, a nice floaty bodysuit, and I was 25 years old. I went 25.7. So I don't know, 27.30, I think that was pretty good. I was pretty pleased. Of course, when I watched the video afterwards, which was captured very helpfully, there was actually a dad of somebody that I've coached there competing. So it was nice to have somebody to talk to at a swim meet. Always good to socialize at a swim meet. So his wife actually captured footage of me. Man, my shoulders are stiff. I am stiff. Who was that stiff old man swimming? I don't know. I guess it was me. My second race, I did a 50 free. I did 24.4, just about the same time I did at my last meet. I got to say, my biggest regret was that the guy next to me snaked me. I did 24.40. He was 24.37. Also, he was 62 years old. So good for him, but very, very bad for my ego. The final race, the one I want to spend a bit more time on because it rocked my world, was the 200 free. And I had eyed this event because honestly, it has one of the most gettable LSC records. If I look at the 40 to 44 LSC records, and this is the only event where I would not have to beat my collegiate best time to break one of those records. As you're about to find out, I'm very, very far from the record, so maybe I shouldn't be basing all my goals around the records. But anyway, I had taken a look at it, and you know, like, I swam 200 freeze back in the day. Why not give it another crack? I wanted to find out where I was in my training. Just like a year ago, right? My first meet 18 months ago, I did only 50s. A year ago, I stepped up to the 100. And so this year, you know, in order to push my limits, I'm going for a 200. My only other frame of reference, right, was that, you know, hey, it's generally been 24 low. I went a lifetime best 23.650 free last May. So when I sat down to estimate what I had, I was like, oh, I could at least break 2 minutes in this 200 free. So I dove in and swam this. First off, I touched the wall. I wanted somebody to wheel like some supplemental oxygen. I mean, there was not enough oxygen for me to breathe in this entire building. And the clock said 209. And I was like, shit. This is why we race, folks. Because the clock does not lie. And it will tell you where you are. Whether you like it or not, the clock does not lie. And it will tell you the truth. Immediately, I got clarity pretty fast. Several things made sense to me. Number one, I had very much overestimated how fit I was in terms of aerobic endurance. I'd actually underestimated how strong I was, that I could basically muscle a 50 within 1 or 2% of my collegiate level, but my 200 was like 20 plus seconds slower than I was in college. And finally, I had this nagging sense that, and you probably heard me talk about it here before, I wanted to change the way I was training. So this tipped me over the edge. Let's take those points one at a time. I've been training again for swimming for 1.5 years. Almost every single one of those workouts has been by myself. This spring, I briefly found somebody else to do one workout with, hurt myself at that workout, doing 25's breaststroke kick, and we haven't worked out together since. In the beginning, coming back, I would get winded doing 12 25s. And honestly, it was kind of fun because anyone knows this, like when you get to a better level of swimming, it gets in some ways a lot harder to get a good workout, right? But when I had basically regressed myself to such a novice level that 12 25s left me gassed, it was like, okay, well, I just got to, these sets that I have to put together for myself are pretty simple. At a certain point, I got some of my speed back. And prior to my last meet, I did start to do some more, quote, endurance training. As I've learned, and if I'm being honest with myself, it was not endurance training. The speed that I had was pretty intoxicating to my ego. I, for instance, could do 100 from a push that felt pretty close to my, you know, collegiate aerobic, let's say, RIP, John Urbanchek, my pink pace. Okay, I would say, you know, it was 110, right? And maybe it was a 105 in college. But really, my pink pace was not a 110 because I couldn't repeat it on a tight interval. I needed 30, 40 seconds rest at least to repeat it. And then I could only do 4 or 6, which makes sense because I probably was at my threshold, right? My coaching brain knew this was not cutting it, but my ego was like, let's go. You're so close. Right? This is perhaps one of the biggest reasons it's important to let other people coach you. I remember when I started kickboxing, you know, I said that I was a pain in the ass to coach in the sport of swimming. And he was, you know, the guy just looked at me, coach, and he just said, empty your cup, right? Empty your cup and let somebody else fill you up with what they know. When you coach yourself, it's almost impossible to empty your cup and overcome your own ego, right? Because the only thing you have to fill back up is yourself. So the good news was I realized why I was struggling to do 100. I have absolutely no fitness backing up anything I'm doing, which is good to learn. The fact that I was a halfway decent performer in the 100 was evidence that I probably had just as much speed and power, at least almost as much speed and power as I used to, but there's nothing below that. There's no base. And if I accept that harsh truth, I also have to accept the wonderful truth. I think a lot of people can listen to this thing and go, man, Chris, you're being so hard on yourself. No. Yeah, of course, I'm being honest with myself, but there's a lot of, to be optimistic about, even when you do a performance that, like, you think, oh my gosh, that was a disaster. So what will change? Well, what has already changed? I went to a coached workout this morning, and oh my God, it completely rocked my world. I thought I was way too cool and fast for this workout, and maybe 10% of the way into it, I thought I, you know, I felt that same, like, there's just not enough oxygen in this room for me. And the pace that I was getting at for some repeats, you know, on tight rest, I was like, this is what my ego needed. But I'm going to give that a try. I'm going to show up. I'm going to let some other people fill my cup. I'm going to come to some coach workouts. And I'm going to humble myself in front of some coaches that, honestly, I had probably been looking down my nose at. And I don't think that's fair to them. I'm not proud of that because it's not consistent with what I believe. I have found that there's really some excellent coaches at the so-called lower levels of sport. And I'm talking like one of these groups, nobody's competitive swimmer in it. It's like, you know, a mid-morning master's sort of fitness group. But it's great for me at this point. Coaching is not some perfect meritocracy where, you know, I don't believe where all the best coaches are working with the best swimmers, you know, and if you let somebody, they'll help you with their swimming. It doesn't really matter in the end because some coaching is infinitely better than no coaching. Coaches are what you make of them. That's what I coach people to do. I've often remarked that athletes think of coaches as far too influential directly in their success. They think that certain coaches have the magic practices and the magic technical advice that, you know, puts them over the top. I don't think that's really how it works. In my situation, regardless of whether it even makes my 200 free better or my 100 breaststroke better, I'd like to develop some endurance because I think it'd be better for my health, better for me as a 40-year-old guy, better for my life. And the path is pretty simple. I said easy to someone earlier. They said, Chris, it's not going to be easy. I go, yeah, you're right. Not going to be easy, but it is simple. Shout out to Garrett. I want to let someone else coach me so I can hopefully drop the ego and do the training that I know will get me there. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. I've been teasing this. We have had several scheduling conflicts, but I think later this week I may finally get Arthur Albiero on here. If you want to reach out to me, swimbrief@podcast@gmail.com, Christy_coach on Instagram, christycoach.com, fill out a contact form, and I'll see you guys soon.